In his latest film, 56 Up, Michael Apted continues the remarkable project he began to work on almost a half century ago, recording the life stories of more than a dozen British schoolchildren in installments every 7 years. They raise questions of how much the British class system shapes people's futures, but also, in Roger Ebert's words, penetrate to the central mystery of life. Mr. Apted's other feature films include Gorillas in the Mist, Coal Miner's Daughter, Gorky Park, most recently Chasing Mavericks. We're pleased to welcome him back to our show to talk about the series. And he's brought along Tony Walker, one of the people whose lives he's been following. 56 Up opens at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village today. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Hello.
Michael, we've just received word that next month you'll be honored with the Directors Guild of America's prestigious Robert B. Aldrich Award for extraordinary service to the Guild. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So are you an American director these days?
I don't know. I know I'm sort of caught between the two. I've lived here for 30 years now, so my career, I suppose, is almost divided in half.
So is this series an opportunity to return home every seven years?
Keep in touch with my roots, you know, and I've done a few. I did a Bond film back there and stuff like that. So, no, I'm by something.
Tony, some of the participants have dropped out over the years. A few have appeared intermittently. What about you? Do you look forward to Michael's visits with the film crew?
Well, I always know it's going to come then, and the production team has been there for the last 28 years I've looked at, and it's like a family, and they keep, you know, the 7 years go fly by, and the knock could come on the door, say, 6 months before, and we anticipate it's going to be filmed, and then we meet Michael. Then he has a criteria what all the subjects I've been doing over the past 7 years, and then he go down that road how he feels he wants to interview the subjects of the film.
And you don't say, oh no, an invasion of my privacy again?
I'm more embracing. I'm more sort of look forward to it and to see it, and most of all I relish the fact that, you know, they come. I make no bones about it. I don't deny that I like the attention, as well as it's nice to see Michael and all the gang, really. But I like it.
How did the series begin?
Well, it was just going to be a one-off film. You know, it was 1963, and there was a lot happening in Great Britain, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, a lot of cultural changes, and the question was, is English society changing? So is the class structure still there?
Because we're talking about working-class superstars now.
About options. You know, if you're born into a certain class, does that determine what your life is going to be, pretty much, and you can't get out of that trap or whatever? And so rather than have a lot of professionals in to talk about it, we got a group of seven-year-old children from different backgrounds, and they talked about it. It was just going to be one film, and it was both chilling and very funny.
Well, you told an interviewer recently that you set out to make a nasty piece of work about these kids who have it all and these other kids who have nothing.
I never said that. That's shocking. No, but nonetheless, there was a tremendous sense of unfairness in English society, you know?
So what led to the series continuing? This was a one-off film.
You know, we thought it was very successful, the first film, and then we thought, well, why don't we go back and see what happens to them? And then when we did that, no one else had ever done that before, and we thought, well, we're onto something here. So from then on, it was sort of a no-brainer just to keep it going.
There was a piece in today's newspaper about how people are, when they look back at their past, they're always very aware of how much they've changed, but when they talk about their future, they see it as being consistent and not changing at all. You can't allow that in your life, Tony.
Well, I mean, appearance-wise, I don't think I've changed. I mean, I've had this conversation earlier today about my appearance. I mean, as a little seven-year-old boy, sort of crew cut, sort of running around, jumping over fences, believe it or not, I'm still the same type of kid, you know, despite being 56. I mean, you know, appearance-wise, my facial expressions, I don't think has changed.
Well, you were a small kid, and you thought you'd become a jockey.
I'm still a small young man, a jockey, absolutely. And I still remember till the day Michael coming into my school, and I can still see it now as though it was plain as yesterday.
And when you picked him and some of the other kids, was it because they projected something you thought
about? Yeah, I mean, I needed seven-year-old children who would not be intimidated by being filmed, who would talk and could, you know, express themselves.
Don't some of the participants disagree about whether England has a rigid class system, even though these films kind of suggest it still does?
I think we all agree that England's changed. I mean, England isn't like it was when we started this, 50 years ago, it's changed a lot. And I think the film has changed. It isn't so much about that class system. It's more about the individuals. They've sort of taken over, and their characters, personalities, and their presence really dominates the film.
But still, there was a study this year that said England has the worst social mobility in the Western world, with the prospects of half the country's children dictated by their parent status.
Yeah, well,
do you feel that that was a trap for you, Tony?
My dad was always inside prison, and my brother brought me up, and so my brother really became my guardian. Consequently, I sort of looked upon him. He was a taxi driver at the time. By the time I was 14, I had an affinity with horses, and then I knew my direction in life, what I wanted. And then from the East End I grew up in, sort of outgoing sort of kid with rough edges, I then had sort of to go into stable and have a sort of yes or no, sir, and had it all knocked out of me, and I become more softer.
Well, do you also think that being in these films and becoming well-known had an impact on the directions you went into?
I still would have been the same person as I was today, and I don't have any sort of worries about cost of cameras or that I'm going to change my attitude or change my opinions about things. You know, I'd still been the same person.
When you were in your 20s, Michael filmed you in dangerous areas around London because he believed you were going to end up in prison one day.
Probably the environment I was brought up in, and at the time I had no direction other than being on the knowledge at the time, learning to be a cabbie. So that was my sort of kept me on the straight and narrow. But I think Michael perceived me to be sort of 3 years down the line, probably in a cell, but in a prison cell. But obviously I proved everyone wrong, and I, you know, become a success of what the environment I was brought up in.
Well, Michael, looking back at these kids and who they were at 7 or 14 or even more important at 21, is it easy to predict how most of them worked out?
No, it isn't, but I think you can tell some things. I think the personality doesn't change. I think Tony's right. He's the same personality at 7 and now. And I think it's true of all of them. You look at these 56-year-old faces, then you look back and you see them in the 7-year-old. But you can't predict how people are going to cope with life, how they're going to deal with it. You can't predict that.
And you can't predict how audiences are going to respond to how these people have turned out. They got very involved with them emotionally. On the other hand, one dropped out because he was receiving death threats.
I don't remember that.
Well,
he's
back now, but he was very upset because he'd criticized Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration.
That was Peter. He was the school teacher, yeah. And at the time he dared to sort of suggest what the cuts were going to the education system in the Thatcher government. Consequently, the right-wing press really got hold of him and sort of criticized him for that, which was very unfair at the time.
But you come across as very politically conservative, Tony. In Britain, don't most people from working-class backgrounds gravitate to the Labour Party?
Everyone's an individual, and they sort of vote on whatever they feel. You know, me on a personal, I'm a believer in free enterprise. I'm a believer in trying to succeed in life. And all them sort of attributes that I have sort of constitutes of a right-winger. Not that I am as far as political-minded or, you know, I just feel that everyone's given an opportunity and you got to better yourself.
Well, you face criticism for saying things like there are too many immigrants in your old neighborhood. Even Michael suggests in the film that you might have gone too far at times.
With respect to Michael, I feel he got it absolutely wrong there as far as suggesting I was a racist. I mean, the stifle of language now, how stifled it is, you can't say with political correctness, it's so sort of sensitive. My suggestion was trying to emphasize only about the East End that I was brought up. Now, if you go back there now to where I was in the 1960s, you had all my traditions now. Now, if you go back there 45 years later, you will now see pubs that are closed, which have become mosques. The street sign names are in Asian writing. Now, with respect to every culture, I was just feel that my culture was being pushed out.
I'm surprised that that's been the experience because I went to school in London.
Yes.
And what I remember is, I went to Chelsea School of Art, and the big pub there was the Six Bells. It's now a Benetton. Nothing like a mosque. But that's the other side of how cities change. In your case, Michael, why did you choose to hold Tony's feet to the fire by calling him a racist when you generally don't involve yourself in that way during the filming?
Well, it's a question I wanted to ask, and I think if I hadn't asked it, people will have wondered why I didn't ask it, and I thought he answered it very well. He was upset when I asked the question, and he was upset afterwards, but I showed him what he'd said, and I thought he answered it well. But I think sometimes there are questions you have to ask, and if you don't ask them, kind of that means you don't have the balls to ask questions.
No, I'll accept that, Michael. But on the other hand, I mean, I have to carry the can. I'm stigmatised as far as, you know, fingers pointing. And I've got to face people. And at the end of the day, I'm a London cabbie. I am a people lover. I do embrace culture and other cultures, and I embrace people.
Well, there are going to be people who are going to agree with you anyway.
Well, that's fair enough. But, I mean, I feel I'm a truthful person. And, I mean, out of respect and an absolute, you know, respect for people as well as culture, and I wouldn't want to offend anybody.
Now, a large segment of the series is about family. First, these kids within their family context, then creating their own families, in some cases now as grandparents. Which do you feel was most important to the subject's satisfaction in their lives, career or family relationships or something else?
It depends who they are, but I was impressed with this series of interviews, this version of the film, that how much the family had given people a sort of solid basis and a view of the world and a self-perspective. And times that are tough and, you know, we're all getting older, there was a security blanket around them which was provided by the various generations that were part of the families, and I was very taken by that.
Tony, what about your grandchildren? What do you think their lives are going to be like in the future?
Well, I've got five grandchildren now. There's been two additions since the last filming of 56. And all I really want most of all, forget the career basis, I just want them to be happy and healthy.
But you point out that England is suffering. You know, the economy is seriously suffering.
You know, the situation in England, I don't think there's enough jobs. And even now, the students now, if they even go to university, they've got a bill about £30,000 by the time they leave university. So what incentive and what signals does that set, you know, give people opportunities to go to university, you know?
Well, in your case, you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. You own your own cab.
That's right.
Your family
correct,
is also
absolutely.
Has cabs.
My wife's a London cabbie as well.
Now, Michael, you had to decide whose stories to focus on in what sequence. You begin this one with Sue's stories. She was a struggling single mom at 35. Since then, she's pulled her life together and moved up through the ranks as a university administrator. Why did you start with her?
I thought hers was a really positive story. And normally, I usually start the series with Tony, but I had this miraculous piece of luck with Tony insofar that the Greyhound track where I saw him at 21, which made me think he would probably end up in prison, which was a serious mistake, was now the site of the Olympic Games Central Stadium. And so I knew that was going to be the most startling image in the film, so I wanted to end with a bang. And so that meant moving Tony to the end of the program, which was no bad thing, but it was such a piece of luck.
Now, how do you envision the future of this project? Everyone's getting on in years, including you.
Me? Really? No,
still look young,
timeless.
Tony, would you feel comfortable working with another director?
Well, again, I mean I feel you should
next
keep
one
it.
Will be 63.
Yeah, I respect that. But, Michael, if for whatever reason, if Michael wasn't to continue, but he's gave 50 years of this is Michael's absolute life story himself. You know, this is his baby, and I, for one, really would not really want to do it without Michael.
Well, you're 71 now. You'll be 78 when the next film is complete.
Well, I'm optimistic. I always say when we do 84 up, I'll be 99. Maybe we'll call it quits.
But you must understand also, it catches the imagination of other different generations. But by the generations of going 14 for 15, they pick up on this series. And by the time they're 21, they're probably early doors married or whatever, and they're kids, and they can look at these films, and they all have a story to tell, which it reminds me of them. It reminds them of, you know, themselves.
In your case, Michael, you're always active. There are some directors who suddenly find they can't get projects after mm-hmm. a certain age. Billy Wilder complained about it, among others. But you're starting a film about a British woman living in Saudi Arabia?
Living in the Middle East, that's what we're hoping, yes. We're trying to get that going. An American woman, yeah. It's a relationship between an American woman and a Muslim woman. I've done a lot of movies about women, and this is an area that I think is, you know, very, very interesting. So I'm exploring that. And a film maybe about Winston Churchill, too. So one of Tony's heroes.
Absolutely.
And Michael will be introducing this film tonight at 7. And then he and Tony will be taking questions afterward. And that's the same also for the 3:55 and 7 o'clock screenings tomorrow. And then on Sunday, Tony will introduce the 3:55 screening. Michael will take the questions afterward. The film, 35 Up, at the IFC Center.
56 up.
What did I've made you so much younger.
Yeah,
you don't look a day over 35. Thank you both so much for being with
Thank
us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.